Hey everybody, John Reap here. You're about to listen to a country-ish bonus dish. That's right, this is for your ears only. I did an interview with very funny comedian from Saturday Night Live, Brooks Wheelan, and we talked about all kinds of stuff, mostly comedy, how he got started, some good gigs, some bad gigs. You know, if you listen to the episode that came out with him in it, you only get a snippet of it. This, what you're going to hear right now, is the uncut, unedited, 40-some minutes long version of the interview. And I think you're going to find it very, very interesting. So check it out. Also know, I'm going to be in Toledo, Ohio at the Funny Bone, October 29, 30, and 31. So if you know anybody in Toledo, tell them come see me. In the meantime, you just sit back and enjoy this bonus dish with the very funny Brooks Wheelan. Where are you at?
I'm in LA. I just got talked into shooting a special in January, which I think is a bad idea.
Where?
This outdoor soccer complex, man. Because I was going to shoot one April 2nd, and they're like, hey, we found a place to do it. And I was like, well, where the fuck am I going to do stand up before? It's right. A different world. And then they're like, I don't know. And I was like, what else am I doing? Okay.
Wow. That's pretty soon. So have you been able to get up anywhere and try out stuff or?
Not since February.
Right.
This is a terrible idea.
Yeah. You're going to have to cram.
But I don't even know how to cram. It's like literally like, hey, you know, you could bench press 150 pounds a year ago. You want to do it tomorrow?
Right. What? Right. Well, I'm trying to help. I don't know what to do. What would you do? I guess, could you do some sort of pop-up thing? I mean,
I know people are doing it. I think I might just call it Brooks Does Stand Up for the first time in a year. Let's see how this goes.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Well, good luck on that. I haven't done stand up one time since March. And yeah. It was crazy. I Tampa, Florida. Of course. Like, you know, all these gigs that I had were canceling right and left, right? Like, they were like, well, we'll reschedule. We're going to have to do it another time. I'm like, yep. Totally cool. And Tampa was not calling me. I'm like, huh, what's going on here? And so I thought, oh, we're going to play a good old-fashioned game of chicken here because I didn't want to be the one to cancel on them. And right. So they called my bluff, and they're like, oh, you ready? I'm like, shit. All right. So I fly to Tampa and, you know, there some people wear masks. Some people didn't. I did a meet and greet. I shook hands. I hugged people. And I thought, I know I'm going to get COVID. And I came back, got tested. No COVID. Couldn't believe it.
Doesn't exist.
I got lucky. Well, I did get it later.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I've been tested three times, and the second time was because I felt like crap. It's actually the 4th of July. I had big plans with my brother and some other friends, and I woke up that morning going like, the worst body ache I've ever had, bad headache, weird taste and lack of smell, and just no energy. That lasted for 2 days. And I went and got tested. They said, yeah, you've got COVID. And then, you know, 10 days later, it's totally fine. Like, I can't tell, like, anything's ever happened to me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just, it's a nightmare. But I'm mostly using this as a reason to have to get back in shape. Like, yeah. I'm like, all right, I got to be somewhat not out of shape to shoot this thing. And I don't know. How was the Tampa shows? Fine, just normal.
Tampa was fine. They did social distance. They took some tables out of the room. They had hand sanitizer everywhere. Mm. You know, I think it's Florida just don't care. They just they show up. There were some people wearing masks. In fact, I sold my own mask. I sold a lot of these. This is a mask of my face.
There you go.
So I, you know, ginger beard mask, you know. So I did sell a lot of those. So,
there you go. Yeah. I like anytime anybody can profit off of a global pandemic.
Yeah, dude. And honestly, it's the healthiest I've been outside of getting sick. Like right. What you were saying, you're using it as an excuse to get healthy or whatever.
Well, I got unhealthy is what I'm saying. And now I need to get back.
You
got to
get. See, what I did in the beginning, it's just because of my brother. My brother is a CrossFit fanatic.
Yeah, and you look great, man.
It's him. Like he turned his garage into a gym. And we started working out together, me, him, and like two other guys. And we were going at it pretty hard there for a while. So as everyone else was dying around me, mm-hmm. I was the healthiest I'd been in 30 years.
Yeah. Yes. I did get healthy for a minute because I was cooking food at home, because I didn't want to go out.
Right.
But yeah, so I just left. I've been driving. I went camping a lot. I've just been spending a lot of time alone out in the woods, which is it's tough to get it from bears. So.
Right. You go camping a lot?
Yeah, I would say I've spent 50% of this quarantine camping.
Nice.
Yeah, I went up to Montana, stayed up there for a while, then cruised down to the Mexico border in Bisbee and met up with like Morgan Murphy and Stan Hope and then camped out in the Saguaro National Forest or what park. Yeah. It's just like, it's much better than LA, which is, just everyone's freaking out. Yeah. And my apartment's not that big. Like I'd rather be in a tent than my apartment,
Yeah. So when you camp that, so you do not the glamping, you're talking about straight up a tent.
No, I do like legit, not even campgrounds, like Bureau of Land Management, or National Forest, where you don't need, there's nobody around for miles and wow. you're out there.
That's awesome.
It's like, so, like resets your brain. Mm-hmm. Plus I really like to get out of service.
Yeah.
And that's so nice just to like, be like, wow, yep. Whatever's happening. I don't know.
I do it once a year with a group of guys that I've known my whole life. They call it the hard drinking weekend. All we do is go to this one spot in Galax, Virginia, and set up tents. There's no phone. There's no cell service, even if we wanted to play on the phone.
Yeah.
And it's tent living, and it's a blast. We were there, and there was an earthquake the last time we were there.
Really?
Yeah, of all places. In Galax, Virginia, and there was an earthquake. It was a 6-something on the Richter scale. I've been in L.A. I lived in L.A. 18 years. I've been through many, many earthquakes, 3s, 4s, yeah. But I never felt anything like this because we were real close to the epicenter. So that was one to remember.
That's wild. There was one not that long ago that was fine. You just get used to them out here. But I've never experienced a real one, I guess. I didn't do Northridge or any of that.
How long have you been in L.A.?
I moved here in 2009 from Iowa, and then I moved to New York for a few years. And then I came back because New York is mean.
Tell me about it, dude.
Yeah. I was like, I got better at stand up there because it was more of a fight than anything. New York is much more of a make me laugh than LA. I feel like LA is like, hey, we're all having fun. But New York's like, I fucking paid money.
Right.
Yeah.
They come in like this, like, go ahead with your thing. Let's see what it is.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And then, you're also all on top of each other and everyone's mad.
Yeah.
So I've lived in LA. LA and New York for the past 10 years.
So let's start from the beginning. I always like to get the story. How did this whole comedy ball get rolling for you? You were in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I was going to the University of Iowa. My brother worked at Penguins. Have you ever done Penguins?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So my brother was a bartender at Penguins. And then I loved comedy my whole life. I've always wanted to do stand up since I was like 10. Mm-hmm. I just like read Adam Sandler did it. And I was like, oh, I should do that. That's that's how Adam Sandler got on Saturday Night Live. I want to get on Saturday Night Live. I'll do stand-up comedy. And so I started like writing jokes as like a little kid. And I would like tell somebody, I was like, yo, I heard this joke on Comedy Central the other day. And I like pitched a joke I'd written that was fucking 8-year-old wrote.
Yeah.
And if they if they laughed, I'd be like, I actually wrote that joke.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, but if they didn't, if they didn't laugh, I'd be like, that was, I thought that joke sucked.
Yeah. Wow. That's a clever way of sneaking in a joke on someone and not getting your feelings hurt.
Yeah. Well, my feelings would get hurt. They just wouldn't know I'm dumb.
Yeah.
And it was writing that material. Oh, I mean,
not look embarrassed. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Okay, that's good, though.
So then I just went and did an open mic at Penguins. And then, like, that night, I mean, you did Penguins back when it was in the basement, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, for listeners, it's like the not anymore because it flooded, but it was old school Penguins is in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It was the definition of an 80s comedy club.
Yeah.
It was like in a basement below a Mexican restaurant, low ceilings, 150 people.
Yep.
It's fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. And I got a job there the night I did the open mic. I was like, I need to be around this 24/7. Mm-hmm. And so I just answered phones, ran the lights, would serve when they needed me to. And then eventually they would let me host the bad shows,
yeah,
the ones that, you know, like Jeff didn't want to host, who was the manager who has owned it. And then, you know, I just took it super serious and then started driving, you know, to Kansas City and Chicago and Minneapolis on the weekends to do their open mics. And
yeah,
then moved to Chicago and was just like, this, I got to make this my life. And then moved to LA to keep going.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a little progression there. Did you ever do Sanford and Sons in Kansas City?
Oh yeah. I mean, when they would let me do 3 minutes. Yeah. And I was there like right after they burned down the club the first time. Like when I got there, Chris Porter had just left and he was doing Last Comic and was like the God when he would roll back.
Yeah. Okay.
Such a cool guy. It was like, hey, Porter's in town, like that sort of excitement.
Yeah. So tell me about Saturday Night Live. I know you were on that for at least a year, maybe more.
Nope. Just one. It was fine. I mean,
how did you get the audition? How'd that whole thing come about?
So I was in LA, you know, like, cause the initial idea, you know, I'm sure like when you're little, you want to be on some TV show or whatever.
And SNL.
Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live, and then you start doing stand up and you fall in love with that. And then SNL left my idea. You know, it was like, I just want to be a great stand up comedian. I want to create television shows. I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And then, you know, you get all the representation and shit that you get. And they're like, hey, do you want to put a tape together for SNL? This is when like they're having like a big exodus, like Andy Samberg and Bill Hader and Armisen and Sudeikis are all leaving. And I was like, well, I didn't think that was in the cards for me anymore. But I was like, okay. And I put together my manager, I mean, coming to her office. We taped it in her office. I just did all characters. I can't do impressions or whatever. And they were just stupid bullshit, like a shy bodybuilder, stuff like that, you know?
Okay,
like,
right.
Yeah. And we sent it to him. And then I went back to work. I had a full-time job as an engineer at Caltech because I went to college and got an engineering degree.
Oh, wow.
So I was a biomedical engineer working at Caltech. And then I get a call at Caltech from my agent that's like, yo, SNL got back. And I was like, they watched it? And she was like, they said it was like not what they were looking for, but it was like outside the box and they liked that.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I can't believe it was even seen by them. And then, you know, I got Montreal like that summer.
Yeah.
Or whatever, just for laughs, which is this it's a thing, you know.
It's the biggest comedy festival for comedians. It's like the Super Bowl of comedy festivals. It's the biggest one. You can get discovered there, get deals made there. And
right, exactly. Yeah. And there's this exciting thing that matters so much until you get it and realize it doesn't really matter called New Faces, where they pick like 12 comics from North America and they're like, hey, these are the 12 new comics that we think, you know.
Yeah.
And I got that after auditioning for like 5 years. And then Seth Meyers was there watching, you know, and I had a great set. And which was like kind of a testament to our, I'm sure you get it. Like when you're a new comic, you're upset, you're not getting things and you're pissed. You're like, I deserve that. And then it just really, they were right. And when you do get it, you're ready for it.
Right.
And so it went really well. Like I just, like, it was like the, like, oh, after that Montreal, I could kind of, it was very, it opened a lot of doors and I knew I was going to get to quit engineering.
That's
and great. It led directly to SNL. Like SNL was like, you want to come right here. And then I was writing there for 3 weeks before they were like, you should be on it too. And then I was like, okay. And then that lasted a year before they're like, we've made a big mistake.
That's great. So when you went there, did you have to do the audition there on the stage in front of Lauren, or because was it different for you because you were a writer?
No, I did it all. They came out to, so I do Montreal. It goes great. Then my buddy, Nick Rutherford, who's a great guy, he gets a call. Hey, Lauren's coming out to see his sketch group, Good Neighbor, who it was him, Kyle Mooney and Beck Bennett. We're in the sketch group. And I was like, that's awesome. That's, I was so excited for my buddy. And then my phone rang. And it's like, you're going to be basically on the showcase for their, for them.
Mm-hmm.
Cause, and I was like, cool. So I'd read Jay Mohr's book. And he talked about his audition for SNL. He's like, I just didn't really give a shit. And I went kind of drunk. So I was like, all right. So I got pretty toasty. And, just fucked around. I didn't really do any characters. I just goofed and I was super loose. And they mistook that for the amount of confidence you need to be on that show. And then, you know, flew me out to New York. It's not like I was wasted. I still was doing jokes, but I was just like, I was making fun of it. Like, I did like 4.5 minutes of stand up and I was like, I'll do some characters because you guys seem to think that shit's cute. And I think Lauren loved that I was like acting above the show.
Right.
When in reality I was just didn't think I could get it.
Yeah.
So then I get a call, come to New York. You're going to test. Great. I go there. I fly there. Once again, I'm like, this is all stupid. This is nuts. This is ridiculous. We're not getting this at all. And, the smartest thing I did, if anybody ever out there listening gets to audition for SNL, I really recommend this. I wasn't sure if they were going to check your bag or not, cause it's, you know, a big important building, 30 Rock, but I brought like 3 tall boys of Heineken. Cause I'd heard you wait a long time in a dressing room. And so I waited in there like 2 or 3 hours. But I didn't mind it because I was just jamming out to my phone, drinking beers, not getting too worried. So once again, by the time I roll on stage, I'm fucking loose. And I'm just like, all right, let's do this. It goes so bad. It was like, because I was just doing stand up and it's okay to do characters to silence. You know what I mean? Because it's like, oh, they're seeing what I can do.
Right.
Because they
right.
don't laugh. But hitting the punchline to nothing.
Yeah.
To literally nothing. It was soul crushing. So
I couldn't imagine. So, I mean, there had to be someone in the theater. I guess it was like, what, 5 people in there? There's a camera guy. There might be Lorne Michaels, another showrunner or something.
Yep. And they're in there just mean mugging. All I heard was Lorne chomping popcorn. And then I go back to my hotel and I'm packing to leave. And then my agent calls and she's like, they said you did great. I go, well, who the fuck said that? And then I stayed a few more days, met them, met everybody, you know, had dinner with Lauren and shit. And then what they did was they're like, you're going to come right for the show.
Okay.
And I was like, great. I don't have to be an engineer. So because they like the stand up. Enough that they're like, oh, he probably has other ideas. And then once I was there, I was just kept goofing around so much. I didn't know you were supposed to be afraid of anybody. So I was still just very confident. And they just were like, hey, this guy should be in the cast. And, then once I got in the cast, it was a lot tougher to, it's a lot harder when you're a cast member to get somebody to write with you than when you're a writer. like, because the 3 weeks I was riding there, I would go up to, you know, these senior writers who are incredible, the funniest people in the world, great sketch writers. And I'd be like, I have this idea. And they're excited to help you with the idea because the whole idea is like, let's make this sketch great. Mm-hmm. But then once I'm a cast member, I'm like, hey, I have this idea. I have an ulterior motive of like, I need to be funny in this too. Right. It's tougher. It's just like a different, there's a real night and day difference between writing for the show and being on the cast. And, it was just tough, man. It was a difficult year. I had, you know, anybody you'll talk to who's ever done it will say it's like literally 100% the highest highs you'll ever have in comedy and also the lowest lows.
Yeah.
You know, like nothing was cooler than doing Weekend Update stand up. And also nothing was sadder than like my 10th week in a row of not getting a sketch up.
Yeah. My buddy Jeff Richards was on that show for a season or two, and he says exact same thing. It is so competitive, and I hate that. Like, that's what I love about just doing stand-up by myself. Mm-hmm. I don't have to compete with anybody for anything. But that show, creatively, having to compete creatively, it would ruin me because I'd be so worried about getting something through that I'm not actually – using all of my brain power for the use of hilarity. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, you know, maybe narcissistic to say like, I'm a friendly person. Like I wanted to get along with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's go out. Let's do this. Let's, you know, hey, we're all, and not knowing that like, hey, this is an institution. You're coming in way late, bud.
Yeah.
Like we've got our own friendships. Like we've got, you know, like, we don't all want to hang out, rah, rah, rah. We're, you know, you're 26 and excited. We're kind of, you know, this is just our job.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just kind of like slowly realizing like, oh, maybe I'm annoying, walking in rooms I probably shouldn't have walked into to say what's up, you know, like, what the fuck are you guys doing? You know, they're like, get out of here. We're the head writers. What do you do? You
know? Yeah.
I just didn't know. It was my first, you know, first job like that. So I wasn't aware to, you know, maybe tread a little more lightly.
And how did they tell you that they were going to let you go?
Oh, it awful. It was the last meeting I had with Lauren was he told me, I mean, he really said this. And I was like at an after party after I'd done like a Weekend Update where I got to do stand up and it was, he was great when you did great. And then when you didn't do great, he was just cold. You know, he was just cold, not a bad guy, but just, you know, knows how to run a weird little empire.
Yeah.
And, he was like, hey, I hope you get comfortable here. Cause you know, you're going to be here 7 years. And I was like, that means a lot. Like, because I'm really nervous. And then, you know, the next phone call I get about it is like, yo, you're not renewed from my agents. And I'm just, but that was, you know, like 4 months later.
Okay.
You know, where it's not like he said that one day and then was fired the next.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it was just he was like, hey, you did great. And like, you know, he was at an after party. He's probably just happy, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, he had to make some, you know, the season like didn't do well.
Yeah.
They blamed the new cast, which I thought was kind of wild. I'm like, we just got here. But it was, you know, overall, I made a lot of really cool friends that like I've maintained those friendships and that it was, you know, it's, would I like to have crushed it? Fuck yeah. You know,
of course.
But am I glad I still got to do it? Of course.
Well, you know, look, you're a part of history now that you can say you were on SNL. That's amazing.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that's a rare fraternity. And my buddy Jeff was the only person to be, as far as I know, he's the only one to be hired and fired from both Mad TV and SNL.
Yeah.
And he wears that as a badge of honor. It's like, can you get hired and fired from both of these?
No, exactly. Jeff's great, man. He's so funny. Yeah, it was cool. It was nice the first time I got it did feel good the first time I got, like, I did an update as myself. I mean, that was like a true, this is really neat. You know, I started comedy because Adam Sandler would roll on. Hey, I'm Adam Sandler. Here's my point of view. And I got to do the, hey, I'm Brooks Wheelan. This is my point of view. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, you did it. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
That felt really cool.
Yeah. And the after parties alone are legendary.
I only probably had fun at like, I think I probably only had like 5 good shows out of 19. So, I mean, out of 24. So like only 5 times was I at the after party being like, that was great. You know, most of the time I was at the after party being like, can I fucking go, man? Like I just had a bad day at work.
God, I know that you don't want to be in a room after not doing well. I get that. Like after a bad set, I want to get out of that club as soon as possible.
And then you feel weird because you just wasn't even in the show, you know?
Yeah.
But it was its own thing. I went back once because I guess I hate myself to an after party. Said what's up to Lauren just to be like, what's up, man? And he was like, he was so nice. But every once in a while, like when Che and Joe's hosted the Emmys, I hung out with them and I just kind of, they're my buds, but I realized like at that party, I don't need to go to SNL parties. Like I was like, this is just kind of a little like, it kind of makes me a little shaky. You know, it's like, it's an ex-girlfriend,
right?
Who's doing really well. You're like, that's fine. I just don't. I should block her.
Yeah, I get the feeling, man. Well, let's go back. I want to talk about some of your comedy influences,
I just want to say I'm a big fan of yours. Thanks for letting me on this, man. I've always been like such a fan. You're so fucking funny. You got to do like OG Presents. Like, right?
Yeah, Comedy Central Presents.
Yes, when they would air them. And, like, I saw it, and it was incredible, man. Like, I did, like, the half hour, and not to bring it back to me, but, like, they aired it at midnight on, like, a Friday, and then I think put it in space or some shit. Like, I got to see yours. Like, you're a big part of, like, me getting into stand-up. Like, in 2005, they would air those back to back to back. I'm in college just devouring great half hour. Great Comedy Central Presents, and you had such a good one, man. So thanks a bunch for having me on.
God bless you for saying that. And they did air it quite a bit.
It was huge.
I'll tell you though, when I walked away from that, I thought it was one of the worst sets I had done. But I remember, I think Barry Katz told me this, or somebody said, "Listen, whenever you get on television and you're doing stand up." And it's not going well, just keep smiling because the people who are taping this, they want it to go well. The guys who are editing it and going to air it, everyone wants it to do well. They're going to make it look great. So just if you give the illusion of you're killing, even if you're not, they could possibly sweeten it up in the post, you know? So I remember that thought distinctively halfway into my set. And I was pissed off. I had to follow Ricky Smiley. You ever heard of Ricky Smiley?
Yeah, yeah.
He's great, but it was his crowd, and we had to share the same audience. So
I got to share one with one of my buds. It was awesome. It was like a dream, like my old like roommate even.
Oh, nice. Yeah, this I didn't get much love at all. Ricky Smiley was supposed to do 30. He did like 45. And then they had to clean up the stage with his props and all this stuff that he brought up there. And then the guy goes, all right, we got one more. What's his name? Oh, yeah, it's John Reed. And then I come out there and it's like, who's this guy? So I had an uphill battle in that set. But I remember when I watch it now, I have a different, you know, I look at it, I go like, oh, that wasn't that bad. And I think it's because I'm given the illusion that it's going great.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was mad because I did mine after I did SNL and I just wanted to do an hour. And they're like, you have to do a half hour first. And I didn't want to burn any of my material. So I just fucking goofed for 23 minutes and just loved it. It's like my most favorite thing I've ever done because I was just like, I'm not giving you any of my A shit because I know that you don't air these that much. Mm-hmm. I'm saving that for my special. And then I remember I walked off at 23 minutes. They came over and they were like, go back, do 5 more so we have a chance. And I go, no, that's perfect. I had that much confidence. I was just like, no, that's, I want it to air in that order and at that time. And they were like, okay. I didn't know at the time that maybe don't say that. to Comedy Central.
I think it's brilliant. If that's what you want, you know.
I loved it. Yeah, I didn't want them to fuck with it. I was like, that was great.
Because they can really fuck with a bit in editing. They can take out the wrong thing just to make it shorter for time and make something look totally stupid. But if you only give them 23 minutes, they can't cut anything. That's actually smart.
They were like, you need to go redo this thing. I go, no, I did it how I wanted to do it. Because it was this bit that they were like, hey, we don't want you to say this. And it was a real bit about how – and it's like there was like, it's not PC. I'm like, I understand it isn't PC, but it was real. It was my brothers would time me on my on the watch to go to go run errands for them. You know what I mean? Like, hey, go get me stuff. And then I come back and they'd look at the watch. I'd be like, what was my time? You know, much more. And they'd be like, oh, that just says you're gay. And and I'm like, look, I'm the one being called gay. And this is in the early 90s. Right. I'm not calling someone else. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with this. This is offensive to no one.
Right.
And they were like, it says you're a girl. I'm like, but that wouldn't have hurt my feelings in 1991 the way that this would. I don't want to do that. And so when I was like, fine, I'll say I'm a girl. And then I didn't. And when I got off, they're like, you need to go back and do it the other way. I go, nah. And I just went and sat down and it aired and everybody the joke is a lot of people's favorites. Cause they're like, yeah, that's not mean. And it's what it was like growing up in the 90s with older brother.
It's time appropriate. You know, that's what happened in that time.
Yeah, I was like, guys, if you're offended by this, you're nuts because
that's
it's not
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just jealous of you guys who got to do the Presents days because I fucking just grew up on those, man.
Yeah. That was so cool. That led to me doing an hour special called Metro Jethro. And when I shot that, I think I should have been smarter because I did an hour and 45 and I used a lot of it as bonus features within the DVD. And I should have which was dumb. I should have just sat on that and then waited another year and had a new special. It was so stupid. I was just so excited. Like, look how much material I have.
Oh my gosh. So remember? Dumb. Yeah. I mean, that's such a, I mean, I remember when I was hosting, I was hosting a one nighter in Iowa City while I was going to University of Iowa. And my goal was to write 10 new minutes every week. I'm 6 months into comedy. Mm-hmm. Just being like, look how much material I've gotten. They're like, none of it's good. Start over.
So tell me, when you were growing up as a kid, you liked SNL. You liked stand-up comedy. Who were some of your, as a kid, who did you like stand-up comedy-wise, you know?
Well, I mean, the two, talking about Comedy Central thing, they just banged over our head as a 15-year-old on repeat was Dane Cook's Presents.
Yep.
And Hedberg's Presents.
Yep.
Two incredibly different styles, but two things that for a 15-year-old, I don't think there's anything funnier on the planet. So I was just very obsessed with Dane Cook and Mitch Hedberg. Yeah. And, and so those two guys were my favorites. And, maybe shit on Dane a little bit, but that first fucking special, his first Harmful If Swallowed is goddamn brilliant.
I know the half hour you're talking about because it's one of the funniest things I've seen too.
He takes his shirt off. He spits water everywhere, dude. He made it his own.
When he did the bit about the difference between how black people fight and Mexicans fight and white people fight.
Yeah.
The people in the background, behind the guy that's about to fight, he painted that picture so good. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
That guy's gonna stand up, man.
Yeah.
And then Hedberg's. Have you ever seen Hedberg's full? Because he bombed for a while.
Right.
He did 53.
Yeah.
Minutes. He bombed for the first 20.
Yeah.
And then they aired the last 30.
Right.
And I remember because I was also steamed. I got really mad at Saturday Night Live because my writing partner there was Michael Che. We were writing together a lot, and he. they asked, Comedy Central asked both of us to do half hours the year I was on the show. And SNL said, no, I couldn't do it.
Okay.
And they let Che do it. And I was really mad because I'm like, let me on television. You're actively keeping me off television because you're not letting me on this show. Let me go do stand-up.
Right.
So, but me and Che sat together before he went and shot his and watched that Hedberg full unedited one.
Oh.
And it just to be like, look, it just go, well, it'll be great. And it was like the most inspirational thing I've seen. Just like Hedberg accepts defeat and then wins them back in a way that is the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
I have never seen the part where he bombed. You know, I've only seen the last part. I would love to see the whole thing.
That's why he sits on the stairs.
Yeah, he's just sitting there.
He's bombing so bad, he sits down and he puts his head in his hands. And I think that's like when the crowd was like, oh my God, like, dude, it's incredible. You should watch it. It's really, truly great.
I got two Hedberg stories for you.
Please. Like when he died, man, I never got to meet him. It was like, truly, I was like really, really, really sad.
Yeah. Oh, he's one of the best without a doubt. So I worked with him one time. And it was right when he was on his decline, like he was heavy into to some hard drugs.
Yeah.
And to the point where him and his girlfriend, after shows, they would show up late and then do no meet and greet, and they were just gone. Mm-hmm. Very to themselves, very quiet. Well, I liked him. He was great. I was hoping to get to know him. You know, I was the MC or whatever. And so it's before a show. The feature act is on stage. I'm the host. You got your feature. You got Mitch Hedberg, the headliner. Okay.
Yep.
Feature acts on stage. Manager comes to me. Where's Mitch Hedberg? We can't find him. I'm like, I haven't seen him. I don't know where he's at. He's like, well, all right. Well, if he comes off stage, you just go up there and stretch until we find Mitch. And I'm like, I don't have anything else to talk about. I'm done. This is early in my career. I had no material left.
Yeah, dude, I burned it, man. No, it's great.
It's gone. I just stand there and talk to people. I don't even do improv at that stage. But I was like, okay. And then right the last second, here comes Mitch Hedberg. He's walking in the back. He's holding a yellow phone book, and he's wiping it like this with his finger like this, and he's doing this, right? Like he's wiping Coke lines and putting them in his mouth.
Oh, no.
And he walked in, and he goes, he looked at me, and he looked at the manager. He goes, all right. Get him off stage. I'm ready to get up there right now. Let's go right now. I want to go right now. Wrap it up. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. And they're like, oh, okay. And then he came off. He went up. He crushed. And then he went home. So I didn't really get a chance to hang out with him. But he did. Right. I had a great set. But it was kind of sad because you could see the writing on the wall about what was about to go down, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that sucks. Yeah, because such a sweet guy. From what I've heard from everybody. Like, just, you know, what a bummer. My favorite, my all-time favorite comic is Ted.
Yeah,
for sure.
And then there's another one at the Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio. Have you heard this one?
I mean, I don't even know if I don't even know. Is it still, I mean, the story or?
The story where he kind of like, it was before he was famous, but he had a small little following.
Okay.
And he was doing the Columbus Funny Bone, and he had to follow a strong feature, like some feature that was high energy. And Mitch was struggling a little bit because he didn't have his own set of fans necessarily. It was just whoever showed up at the club. And he was, you know, he's low key. He's very cerebral. You got to pay attention to the guy. But anyway, he was having problems following this feature act. And then he started getting mad and he started doing shots on stage. And before you know it, there's like six empty shot glasses on the stool, and he knocks it over, and one busts to the ground, and the crowd laughs at that. He goes, oh, that's funny, and he picks it up, tells jokes, and starts busting shot glasses. And then the club owner's like, you can't do that, and then, like, turns the mic off, turns the light off, and then Mitch as people are walking out, he goes out with them and stands outside and does his act outside to people as they're begrudgingly walking past him, upset. And I got told that story the week after because I asked the manager, I was like, so how was last week? He's like, oh, I don't really want to talk about it. So those are my two Mitch Hedberg stories. I had to follow that week after that debacle, you know.
It's always nice to be the comic that doesn't do that debacle, though, you know?
Yeah, I'm Johnny Low Maintenance. I like to tell every club owner, every club manager, I'm Johnny Low Maintenance. Get that in your head. Just give me the address and the show times and the key to a condo or a hotel. I got it from here. I don't need anything.
Right. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm always just like, I hotels are like my enemy. So I learned to like rent a car always. And then I'll just spend all day at whatever the nearest like nice park is.
Yeah.
And you know, just like, cause if I hang out in a hotel all day, I'm going to come out like I've been in a hotel all day. Grumpy, you know, I gotta be in a good mood.
Yeah.
Good at acting. I just can't, like, if I'm a grouch, dude, the worst thing I do is if I really like the feature, I find out who's not laughing at them. And I'm like, this is funny. And that guy's wrong. And then I'll like open up with like, what's your problem, man?
Yeah.
Which is not how you open as a headliner yelling at someone in the crowd. Because the crowd doesn't know that this guy's been mean mugging your pal the whole time. And I had to learn not to do that.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, I always ask this question of the comedians that zoom in because my dad was a big influence on my comedy career. He was funny. He's a funny dude. He got class clown. I got class clown. Mm-hmm. What about you? Would you say your dad is a funny guy? You got any good funny dad stories?
I mean, no. Yeah. He's funny, but I'm the youngest. He's funny. Sure. He does crazy shit. I'll say that. One time, I was just really quiet. I just had like, according to my family, I was the least funny one, you know, cause just the youngest and it was, you know, a hectic house. But, my dad, one time we went to the Field of Dreams living in Iowa, the Field of Dreams is huge. And I lived like 15 miles from it.
I've been there.
And it sucks. Yeah. I mean, it's fucking boring.
It's in the middle of nowhere. And there's nothing to do.
Yeah. So that's where I grew up. And, but one time they had like, Cooper's Town night there, or whatever. And all these all-stars played, all these like, you know, literal fucking, Hall of Famers played. My dad loves George Brett. I'm named Brooks after Brooks Robinson. My brother's Brett after George Brett.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so my dad gets drunk enough to buy the game-worn George Brett jersey afterwards, you know? Uh-huh. And then he was wearing it, fucking hanging out in the parking lot, and then somebody came over and was like, oh, my God, George Brett's just hanging out in the parking lot. So he just starts signing shit. He set like a line for him, and he's just like signing fucking George Brett on all these people's gear. Until like some fucking guy came up here and he's like, this is not George Brett, guys. Like this guy lives down the street.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I always thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. There's a guy one time at the Comedy Works in Denver. We were hanging out in the green room. Waiter comes back. He goes, guys, I don't want to freak you out or anything, but in the audience tonight, I don't know why, but Bill Engvall's out there. I don't know if that's going to make y'all nervous, but he's here to check out the show. And I was the headliner. So I'm like, oh, cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
I'd like to meet. Does he want to come back here in the green room? They're like, I don't know. I was like, oh, okay. So the whole show, I'm waiting for Bill Engvall to come back there and say, hey, I'm looking through the curtains to see if I can see where he's sitting. I don't see him. And, I do the whole show. Show's over. Nothing. I'm doing the meet and greet. The very last guy, this dude walks up to me, and he leans in. He goes, "You know who I am?" And at that moment, I realized this dude tricked everybody. He's not Bill Engvall, but he looks a little bit like him. And so when he leaned in to try to trick me.
Right.
He goes, you know who I am? I said, you ain't Bill Engvall. He goes, I know, right? And I'm like, but he got in for free. They gave him free drinks. The whole staff was bamboozled by this guy.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, of all people.
I had the opposite, the exact opposite, because I was doing Cleveland, whatever, hilarities. Mm-hmm. And across the street, same night, theater, Brian Regan. So, like, I'm mad at my crowd. Because they should be at Regan.
Why aren't you over there?
Yeah. But opposite, Brian Regan, I'm sure as you know, fucking rules.
Yeah.
He comes over, watches the late show, and then we drink all night. And like the opposite of that Bill Engvall story, he was just like, oh man, I fucking love this and this and this.
Yeah.
And I'm bombing to a late show, 20 people in a 300 plus theater. Like, and it was just like, that's just how cool that dude was. So
yeah,
I was dumb.
He's one of my comedy heroes, and I just met him for the first time a couple years ago. And one of my favorite pictures I have is us holding each other. I'm looking into his eyes like I've met my savior or something, you know, because yeah. I've always tried to be like that guy, a sophisticated, stupid, you know, mm-hmm. I kind of like a little Steve Martin, a little that's always what I try to pattern myself after. A Southern Brian Regan is kind of what.
Yeah.
I remember one time I was in a hotel room and I thought, I'm going to write a good bit today. You know, I'm going to write a bit about the stupid ironing board. Okay. Because right. I iron my jeans sometimes. I'm like, well, every time I open up this stupid ironing board, it makes a god awful noise. You know, you go, yeah. It makes this weird noise. And I thought, oh, that's funny. I'll write about that. And as I'm writing it, I'm thinking someone has to have already written a bit about an ironing board. So I just Googled ironing board comedian comedy, and Brian Regan did it 20 years ago. And it was 1,000 times funnier than anything that I was going to come up with.
I mean, I had that last night where I was talking with my friend about how cancer doesn't
win. You only beat cancer. Nobody's like cancer won. Cancer can only, and this, we're not trying to write. We're just talking about somebody who had cancer. I'm like, when cancer at best ties, because you kill cancer when you die. Cancer's never hanging out at a funeral being like, see what I fucking did? Smoking a cigarette. And it felt so familiar. I tweeted, I was like, did someone have this joke? You know, Twitter does its thing.
Yeah.
Norm MacDonald, 100 times funnier. You kill, you win when you die of cancer.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing. All right, man. A couple more questions, and I will let you go. And thanks again for doing this.
I appreciate it. It was fun.
I like these kind of random hypothetical questions. If you could time travel, would you go back in time, or would you go forward in time, and why?
Well, dude, I had a joke that my girlfriend said, don't do this. and I think she's right, but I'm putting the caveat into this podcast that I understand that this would be, this is not a good joke and I wouldn't do it on stage, but you set me up.
Yes.
I said, I was trying to write a joke about if I had a time machine, I would go back in time and molest myself. That way I would forever have the worst childhood of anyone I've ever met. Because someone could be like, oh yeah, this happened. I'm like, yo, yeah, that happened. Well, you know what happened? I molested me. Like I chose to do that. You can't beat a worse, like, so yeah. She said, that is very insensitive and no. And I'm glad that this podcast has given me a format.
There it is.
To say what I would do if I had a time machine.
I thought like I would go back in time. I would like to go forward in time just to see what it turns out to be. But I realized I'd be like a caveman. I would have no skills, and I would probably get I get scared.
I can't play video. I'm not even good at video games anymore, man. And I'm like a. Remember how bad your dad was at video games? You're like, how are you this bad? I'm that now.
Yeah, we are. I think I would go back in time just to party with my dad. My dad was like in a band called the Cobras. He played drums. And I hear all these legendary stories. You know, when you're hanging out with your dad as a kid and some other adult that knew your dad when he was younger starts telling stories, and I look up at my dad. He's like, "Dad, don't listen to him. He's crazy." Like, I want to know those stories. I want to go back and get these stories. So I would go back in time to hang out with my old popsicle.
Yeah, yours sounds like a better choice.
Well, I might do some molesting while I'm there. You know what I mean. Maybe I'll go molest him, you know, bring it full circle.
Oh, no.
Well, let me ask you this. All right, okay. last question. If you could have one superpower, you know, what would it be?
Time travel. I want to make that joke happen.
You want to make it happen. everyone likes to say flight or invisibility, move things with your mind. Time travel, that counts, doesn't it? Time travel.
I think that, like, I always feel like in superhero stuff, it's like you're not, they're like regulated to like a certain amount of time travel. You know what I mean? Like 7 seconds or something. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
It's never just like, yeah, you can fly around time. I don't know. I mean, my super, I guess, I don't know. Being happy, I guess, would be my superpower. Like, I could just flip a switch and I'd be happy. That'd be pretty nice.
Well, know? That would be. Yeah, I think there's drugs for that. But no, I think I've thought about this. When I was a kid, I wanted to fly. I was like, okay, fly. Everyone goes fly. But then you're like, well, if I'm really fast and if I can jump, if I'm really strong, like the Hulk can't fly. But have you seen him when he jumps? He's basically flying.
Yeah, he can jump. He can. Yeah, he's like a grasshopper.
Yeah, so that's like cheating to me. And then you go, well, invisibility would be good, but if I go, then that's creepy time. That's me going into, like, you know, the women's locker rooms and stuff.
Yes, no, that is invisibility. I feel like is only in vogue from 12 to 14.
Yeah. Right.
I think if you ask any 12 to 14 year old boy, they're not even thinking about it.
Yeah. Invisibility, yeah. Number one.
Yeah, invisibility. Right. I didn't even, but I asked what you wanted for lunch. I want to be invisible.
Oh, yeah. All right, dude. Hey, Brooks, good to see you, man.
Yeah, man, I'm a fan. I'm really honored that you asked me to be on this. I can't wait to, you know, run into you out on the road in you know, a few years, hopefully. Probably Tampa.
Yeah, sounds good, buddy. Yeah. Do you want to plug anything?
Oh, yeah, please. I have a podcast that I really like. John, you're going to do it. I'm excited. I have a podcast called Entry Level where I interview comedians and musicians and actors about all the jobs they had before they could quit those jobs and make a living doing professional life. Like, I just had Bill Burr on and Tim Heidecker.
Wow.
Like Taron Killam, Bobby Moynihan, Kyle Mooney. Like, basically, if you like comedy, I've got like a big enough library that you can go look at Entry Level. You'll find someone you're interested in.
Yeah.
And you'll love it.
Sweet. Well, yeah. I'm honored to be on it. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. I was stoked to hear about some of these shitty jobs. I bet. Actually, you know what? I bet you were born with a golden spoon in your mouth.
I cannot wait to tell you. All right, yeah, stay tuned for more with Brooks Whelan. Go to his podcast.